Get yourself a cup of coffee and pull up a chair. We're going to be talking to designers and developers about how they got started, what keeps them passionate, and what challenges them. It's the best remedy for imposter syndrome. This is Build Process. Good evening, good afternoon, or wherever you may be, or whenever you may be. I'm your host, Michael Feenan, and you are listening to what is probably going to be the inaugural episode of our segment, Build Process. Now, Build Process is going to be a once-in-a-while little piece we do where we talk to other web professionals in the field, talk about what they're doing, what makes them excited about being a developer or a designer or a UX professional or whatever the case may be. So, with me today on the other microphone is my good friend at the Web Accessibility Summit up here in Columbia, Missouri today. We're recording a little bit on the go, but that's all right. It's providing a fun challenge for me, and I'm sure Paul's got more than enough running around to do to take some time out for me. So thanks a whole lot, Paul, for sitting down with us.
Not a problem.
So my friend Paul Gilzow.
Hi, I'm Paul. I'm a programmer analyst here at the University of Missouri. I've been here 17 years.
Jesus.
It's a long... Actually, this is my 18th year, coming up on my anniversary next month. And I've been both with the Division of IT, the HR, and then finally over with the Strategic Communications and Marketing team, where I'm the lead developer and currently in charge of trying to migrate our entire web infrastructure over to the cloud.
What does that even mean for the university?
Well, we have about 1,800 websites.
Oh, only?
Only.
Only.
Currently, those are contained in about 12 different CMSs, and they want to narrow that down to two, both Drupal and WordPress, and then move everybody from their disparate, decentralized web servers to one cloud solution.
You know, that's kind of bold too. With Drupal, I understand, because Drupal is high powered. It's, you know, it's got a lot of headroom in terms of what it can do and how it can scale. WordPress is an interesting for
it
a
is.
University, and you say 1,800 websites. Even having worked at a university, that number, and Mizzou is, I mean, it's a good sized university, but it's far from huge, right?
Right.
So, I mean, Columbia is what, 100,000, a little over 100,000
people? A little over 100,000.
But still, that is a bold undertaking, and good luck, good soldier.
Yes, it was decided, that decision was made because we match about the market rate. About a third of the websites that we have are in WordPress, about 5% are in Drupal. Inside CMSs, the bulk is WordPress, and about 25%, I'd say, is Drupal. And so the decision was simply to go with the biggest lion's share of the CMSs that we had and then migrate from those other ones into one of those two solutions. You're right, though. What we've discovered is that WordPress does not scale horizontally very well. It can scale vertically. It can do more, it can process faster. It can serve more and more visitors. But what we found is trying to scale it laterally, trying to scale up a whole bunch of sites simultaneously was rather problematic, has proven to be quite challenging.
And I can only assume the Gutenberg update is probably a...
That one is problematic.
Is it terrifying? Is it scary? Is it concerning? Is it just something that you're going to deal with when you deal with it?
Well, we're going to deal with it when it comes out, when it finally comes out. My biggest concern is trying to retrain all the users that we currently have to use Gutenberg. We have a wide variety of skill sets that are doing content in WordPress, from those who are administrative assistants just starting out and who have never touched WordPress, all the way up to a faculty member who's been here for years doing stuff with it. And some of them struggle just with the current interface, which most people would say is fairly straightforward, fairly easy to understand. So Gutenberg, with the way it kind of restructures things, is a little scary in terms of trying to figure out how we're going to retrain those users. The other complication with Gutenberg is it does give a lot more flexibility to the layout of a page, which is fantastic if you are someone who has the skill set and the knowledge and experience to correctly lay out a page. What we've discovered with many users who don't have any experience in that is once given the opportunity to redesign a page how they'd like, becomes a horrible nightmare for end users to try to navigate.
It's salt, right?
Right.
A little bit of salt goes a long way, but a lot of folks, if they don't know what they're doing, they just kind of dump it in and hope for the best.
Yes. So the plan right now is to probably withhold Gutenberg or fall back to the classic editor until we can kind of get some training and see how people react with it and start getting them through that training.
That'll be an interesting conversation. I'll maybe have to bookmark you for a few months down the road. That we talked about that in our Gutenberg episode where we discussed, it certainly there is a technical component to it, but a huge piece of that really is training, is logistical, it's planning. It's a planning right. problem and knowing what's coming, when it's coming, and how exactly you're going to roll out yep. the training pieces and all of that. Because obviously you have a lot of people with their hands in the pie. Yep. And that's, a whole lot of ways for people to just get confused
and create something that's going to take quite a bit of work to either fix or redo.
Yeah.
So that's the big challenge I think we're coming up with Gutenberg.
Oh, good luck. I better you than me.
It'll be an interesting time.
We run at our company 3 off the top of my head websites in WordPress that I'm responsible for. Only 3.
Right.
And even that I'm looking at going, this is going to be an interesting few months. And of course, not even getting into like all the GDPR pieces of it and all that, because that's true for everything.
Yeah. But
so you came in right around the millennium then.
Mm-hmm.
You started right about 2000, right?
Yes.
And so what, why? Why would that appeal to you, especially at that point in time?
Well, I started programming in 3rd or 4th grade. Back in BASIC, way back, wrote a voting program in 5th grade for my school. They used it. So was just always drawn to programming and did it throughout middle school. High school came and you become a teenager and you kind of lose interest in those things. And
see, that's where we got into it. A friend and I in high school, we get the TI calculators.
Right, right.
And we discovered, hey, these could solve a whole lot of problems for us if we tell it
how to do it.
That was sort of my inauguration into, hey, I can write code and just make it tell me the periodic table of elements.
Do whatever you need it to do.
And the teachers didn't really understand that at that point. Now, I'm guessing they're a little smarter, but.
So I did that, kind of fell out in high school, took computer classes in college, thought I might go back into it, and absolutely hated Pascal, and it turned me off completely from computing. Went and got my marketing degree, but my first real job, I had several jobs. My first real job was being a technical trainer for a company out of St. Louis, and I was subcontracted for the state of Missouri to teach the full Lotus suite, that IBM Lotus suite of products.
Right.
And as one side, I also taught HTML, and that was kind of my reintroduction into programming. Was this web page, and I started getting into the web. I had my own GeoCities page,
right,
and started getting into that and really loving it. I eventually ended up here at the university as another technical trainer, and at the time we were using paper surveys at the end of each class, which I thought was ridiculous. Why do we need to do that? So I taught myself ASP.NET and built a survey application. About 5 years after I started there, the human resources department came to me and said, we need an online application system. We're processing about 30 to 40,000 paper applications a year, and surely there's got to be a more efficient way to do this. So I moved over to HR and built an online job application system for them that processed, in the first year, it was between 225 and 250,000 job applications.
Wow.
So they went from shuffling.
When you said application, I thought you meant student application.
No, this was like job application.
That's still a crazy number for jobs.
Crazy number. It was enough that they had failed to anticipate the increase in applications that they would get. They assumed it would be 30,000 pieces of paper, and we do it online, it would be 30,000 online applications. But because it's so much easier to submit one online,
you decrease
the barrier to entry because you don't have to fill that piece of paper out. All you have to do is shop for a job, and you've already got your resume and your application finished. You just keep applying for whatever job you want. So that was great. It was successful. And then about 2 years after I built that, within that 2 years, I built some other processing pieces for HR that they hadn't automated yet. So we automated, it's called personnel action forms, but if you need to take a vacation or you need to change jobs, change your name, those types of HR processes.
Right, yeah.
and automated those.
Before we had a PeopleSoft type.
Right, exactly. That option. PeopleSoft was just coming in. It had been implemented or started to be implemented when I started in 2000. And they'd rolled out the finance and the student piece, but they hadn't got to the HR. So about 2007, 2008 was when they started to do the HR piece. And at the same time, the head of the web team, the central web team here, came to me and said, we need a programmer because we want to take the web for the university to the next level, and we need a programmer here to help us get there. And so I moved from HR over to that. I was very proud to say that the online job application system that I built, despite them having PeopleSoft's e-recruit application implemented, the hospital said, no, we don't want that one. We want Paul's, and used it until, I want to say, 2012. So they used it for 3 or 4 years after I even left.
The right answer whenever somebody says, do you want to use PeopleSoft or, it's always the or.
or no, just no. So I moved over there in 2007 and have been there since. We've gone through a ton of transitions and a ton of changes as far as our priorities and what we were charged with to do, but have for the most part loved it over there.
And what's your specialty now as far as like languages and process and all of that?
We have always traditionally been a LAMP stack, so Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. So my forte is PHP. Started doing WordPress sites in 2009 and have been building WordPress sites since then. So that's kind of my specialty area here at the university. And then, I don't know if you've met John Boyer. He's also here. He's the Drupal side of our shop.
Gotcha. And so you guys are all together then. What about, do you guys have anybody who does automation testing, QA, design, things like that? Are those part of your team?
They will be. We had two additional people in those types of roles, and we've lost one of them. Jason Rollins is the other one, but he also serves as the assistant director, so he's kind of split. So we are getting ready to hire another designer, developer, to kind of fill that role. Automated testing we've started to get into, and that is actually John and I are building out most of that right now.
What are you using for your platform?
Behat.
Okay.
We use GitLab as the deployment.
Yeah.
So it builds out an environment, runs the tests. And then we're just starting to use, or looking to use, I forgot, it's not PhantomJS.
Mocha? Jest?
I'd have to look it up. But another one to do visual regression testing.
Oh, visual, yeah. Yeah, I'm not. We have not gotten there yet.
Well, we haven't either. We just know that's where we want to go.
Our visual piece is still very manual. We have a manual QA tester, and his job is to go in and just look at the pages.
Yeah.
And I mean, he tests forms and buttons and clicks things as well. But we brought him on specifically because we had the automation piece that's been sorted out for quite a while for us. But that visual manual piece was where we were like, you know, nobody likes to talk about the monster in the closet of like their CSS files. And so we were starting to run into problems where you change that one class or, you know, you think that you've got something that's atomic and isolated, and it turns out, no, it's used, you know, across 48 different pages, and now you've broken those. So that's where we're like, okay, let's maybe bring somebody in who will stop that.
Start working on that. Well, and automation in general is a huge chunk of what John and I are working on now as far as how to deploy automatically sites, create them, and bring them up in whatever environment we go with, as well as testing. So when we go to do an update, we can automate testing of 1,000 sites all at once before we bring them up or before we update them.
And this stuff is all significantly more complicated than when you picked up HTML in 2000 or whatever it was. What have you done, especially, let's say, the last 5 years in particular? You know, what keeps you sharp? How do you keep yourself motivated in terms of just staying on top of these new tools? To give you an example, I am pounding myself over the head right now with Mocha.js for JavaScript testing. And it has shown me how out of touch I get, how quickly. Because it is hard, and Mocha's an easy, like, it is not a difficult piece of software, but integrating it after the fact, I'm learning, wow, I've not kept up with how to plug some of these things together.
Yeah, it's this industry can be extremely demoralizing because you think, man, I am on top of my game. I've got this down. And you stop paying attention for 2 seconds and all of a sudden you feel like the world has just left you behind, like you are nowhere near where everybody else is. So it's tough. I mean, to be honest, one of the best ways I have found recently to kind of keep myself going is when we brought John on. John had a completely different, his background was Drupal, had a completely different outlook. And so he was real big into Composer. Being a WordPress shop, we don't use Composer. We don't have any need for Composer because all your dependencies, any dependency you have is in a plugin or it's in a theme. You don't use Composer to manage WordPress. So I had completely fallen out of that aspect of dependency management in PHP and have fallen in love with it. It's amazing. And so we're, one of the things with the WordPress deployments is we're looking at moving our entire WordPress workflow over to a Composer-based workflow and all the challenges that brings in terms of compliance of, you know, now WP packages runs through a third party. So how does that, can we get that compliant within our internal policies? But that's just been an amazing, just having somebody else with a completely different aspect, with a completely different background, questioning what you do.
Right.
And saying, why aren't you doing it this way? What about this way? So that and just reading constantly and trying to pick up some stuff on the side, you know, do a little React, do a little Vue to try to keep my skill sets up with those. But to be honest, like the front end stuff, I've completely fallen out of. I mean, if you were to ask me to debug some CSS, I would struggle. Because that's just not, I've never been a designer. Front end's not been my forte. So I just kind of let that one go to the designers that we had on the team.
Yeah, it's funny how you kind of fall into those comfort spots.
Yeah.
You find where it's squishy and you settle. It's, and I think it's important to talk about like the learning aspect and the keeping up aspect because, you know, one thing I hope that this new build process segment that we're doing here focuses on is, you know, imposter syndrome is
huge.
It's not just huge. It's not just real, but I think it's almost, you mentioned the word demoralizing. You know, I think when I look at folks, because now, I mean, I've been in the industry for professionally since 2006, but I've been building websites since the 90s.
Right.
You know, I look back at how I did things and how I do things now, and I realize I am getting left behind on things. But at the same time, it's important to realize that that's okay. Because you're not supposed to keep up with all
There's
the things.
No way.
You find those squishy, comfortable areas and keep up with those. Because with the increase in complexity, I think organizations are starting to understand that you can't have the one size fits all webmaster anymore. That's not a thing.
Yeah, they're a unicorn. They don't really exist.
They exist. I know one, and I don't know how his brain works.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't say they don't exist. I do know a couple, but they are very well paid because they're
exactly.
very rare.
Yeah, think about the new blood aspect and getting somebody to challenge you. Even if they don't work for you, if you make friends with one and can sit down and talk to them once in a while,
yeah.
It's incredible to think about, like, they can pick up a library and it's just like, oh yeah, I was playing with this the other night and it's, you know, I made it, you know, work with Webpack and Jenkins and all this. And we just kind of threw that in there and it let us get rid of like 500,000 lines of code. And it's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You did that just last night for fun? Because how?
Yeah.
That's what that makes me realize, nope, I am no unicorn. I am like a horse with a plastic thing glued to my forehead.
I think one of the most important things I've realized, especially late, is that it's okay to not be great at all of it. Like,
yeah.
There's no way to be able to keep up with every aspect. So like you said, you pick the thing that you're passionate about, the thing that you really like, and you dig into that and realize it's okay that you don't know all the React or a particular framework or a particular set of tools. I'm trying to think like Webpack and Gulp and those things or whatever. You pick out the pieces that you are really passionate about and dive in because that's what's going to make you happy. You know, so for me, security and accessibility have always been my big passions. And so digging really deep into security and figuring out, you know, how can I make the university more secure? And then putting myself out there and just being passionate about that.
Yeah. And so what does that mean for what's next for you? Because obviously Well, I know our listeners probably don't. You speak at conferences all over the place with phenomenal talks on security.
Thank you.
And well, the security talk maybe is the only one I have heard from you recently, I think.
I don't know. I guess last year's
High Ed Web 2016.
Probably would have been the last one, right?
So, but what's next in terms of whether that's something you're working on personally or with the university, besides obviously the website migration? Like, what are you looking towards, or what is exciting for you? Do you think that's coming?
Well, so once we get this cloud solution figured out and we get those pieces built, well, that's exciting.
Are you building your own cloud infrastructure for that?
Well, we don't know.
Okay,
we're looking at it. We're looking at prepackaged options, and then we're looking at building our own in either Google or Amazon or Azure.
Okay.
That's really complicated. I don't think we'll go that route, but we've got it on the table.
Yeah, okay. Beanstalk is your friend.
Well, there's a ton of options. That's just it. There's a ton of options. So just trying to sort through which one's going to work for the university, because you work for a university, we're a weird beast. We have all these weird policies that we have to adhere to, and a lot of requirements that we have to try to meld into these prepackaged solutions. So after that's done, what I'm really excited about is one of the things that the team has been working on is, and I'm going to call it a sausage factory, even though they don't like me calling it a sausage factory anymore, but taking our design system and running it through a process that then spits out Drupal and WordPress themes directly, so that our Drupal sites and our WordPress sites look, on the front end, exactly the same.
Interesting. Okay.
So we've developed a framework in WordPress that uses Twig, and we're matching it to how Drupal uses Twig through Symfony.
I'm staring at Paul a little blankly right now to our friends on the other side. I don't even know how that would work.
It isn't working yet. We have most of our WordPress sites are based on Twig, so that our developers, our designers can design in Twig and have it completely separated from the business logic and all the interactions with WordPress directly. That also frees us up to be able to change those over to Mustache if we need to, and then use a headless CMS. But again, the idea is to bake out from our design system that they're also developing, take those design systems, pre-bake template, and then just push out the Twig files to WordPress and Drupal and automatically update those.
Interesting.
So if the chancellor says, you know, we want, this actually happened not too far long ago, you know, we want four buttons on every website. Well, all we have to do is create the four buttons and the Twig piece, push that out, and every site will automatically have them.
Very cool. With multiple CMSs, that reduces, I mean, it certainly adds complexity in one area, but it reduces it significantly in another. So.
Yeah, so right now it's impossible. We can't do it. We've got, you know, like I said, 12 different CMSs. We've got static file or static sites. It's physically impossible to go do it right now. And so the goal is to be able to do that in the near future.
Very cool.
Yeah, so that's very exciting. The whole team is really, really kind of chomping at the bit to try to get to dig into that and make that happen.
How many visitors a month do your websites like in total process?
Oh wow,
a couple million,
several million, yeah,
several million. Yeah, just I asked that question mostly for scale for the folks at home to kind of understand how much movement there is when you have that much property to manage.
I think in terms of doing the contracts, we estimated, I want to say 10.5 million, or maybe I'm thinking terabyte. I think it's 10.5 terabytes of data a month is what we move.
Man.
Yeah.
Okay, that's real.
So maybe 4 million visitors, something like that. It's a lot. It's one of those things where a lot of them charge for bandwidth. And that becomes an extremely expensive.
So do you do internal chargebacks? Is that what happens?
We do. The university is on INET 2 when we're hooked up through Mornet. So we don't really pay anything for bandwidth right now. I mean, it is less than, it's like 10th of a cent per gig or something. It's dirt cheap.
So you can leave our listeners with one piece of advice for the future. And think about these folks as being young, up-and-coming type people. What would be that piece of advice that you would give them to make them think that this is not a scary field to be in?
Oh, okay. So, well, I'll do it as a kind of a combo. I'll say one is listen to those that have been there before you, and and really listen to their advice, because they're probably not telling you to stop you from doing something because they don't like you, but they're trying to stop you from making the same mistakes they did.
Yeah.
And the other is to realize that you're not an imposter. Nobody, except for a few unicorns, actually has all of it figured out. It's okay that you don't know everything, you don't understand everything, because nobody else does either. We're all just kind of making do as we can.
Both good pieces of advice. I like it.
Cool.
Paul, I want to thank you for sitting down with me.
Yeah,
I know I'm stealing time away from you. I don't know how much are you doing the plan, helping with the planning and the running.
Yeah, I'm doing audio video today, so.
So yeah, I'm still, and I'm doing audio, or yeah, just audio here, but I'll be your doppelganger.
There you go.
So thanks for taking the time out with us.
Happy to do it.
We will catch up at some point, I'm sure. But let us know how the WordPress and Drupal migration goes.
I'll be doing a presentation on it as soon as we get it done.
So there is a case study there. A pretty good one, it sounds like.
I'm hoping.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.